Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 262 for comics originally released on August 15th, 2012. And speaking of August 15th, way back in Weekly Comics Spotlight number 1, we covered the comics originally released on August 15th, 2007. So here we are 5 years later. We've been doing this each and every week. Haven't missed a week yet. And it was interesting, Bob. I went through some of the comics, the list of what we'd reviewed early on. And of course, with the new number ones, the reboots, and the retitling and all that stuff, it took me a little while to find any title that was still around. The first one I found was, of course, The Walking Dead. We had covered issues like 41, 42, I think 40 also, so some of those earlier issues. And then the next one I found, I think, was Knights of the Dinner Table. Beyond that, I think there's a lot of stuff in those first really 20, 30, 40 episodes where, I mean, we were covering a Marvel and a DC, so mainstream books. But so few of those have not been restarted, retitled, rebooted, relaunched, or what have you.
Yeah, it's all the reboots, right?
Yeah.
Because we covered in our second episode, we covered Birds of Prey 109.
Mm-hmm.
And Birds of Prey is back to 12 or something now at this point. It went up to some point. It, you know, all kinds of hijinks going on there. We covered Flash 232, Batman 669, Iron Man 22. You know, all these books have just gone through lots of changes.
Yeah. I mean, Ms. Marvel, I mean, we had Fantastic Four 550, but that I think, well, not I think, I know it went to FF and then back to Fantastic Four and stuff. It's funny. I mean, a lot of these properties are still around or have come back a few times. I mean, we covered She-Hulk. We're about to get a new She-Hulk series featuring a different She-Hulk, of course. It's just, it's funny how much things have remained the same and how much they've totally changed.
Well, I think what we notice is the only ones that have stayed constant are creator-owned books.
Yeah, and it shows really that you can do a long-term viable series, and you don't have to resort to sales shenanigans. If you've got a clear creative vision and are able to stay true to it, or at least slowly morph it and change it over time, you can be very successful with that. So I think there's a lesson to be learned there for the bigger publishers, and specifically the marketing people inside of them. You know, you can do marketing pushes without necessarily having to do a new number one. But, you know, it's a lesson I don't really expect them to learn anytime soon.
New number ones are so shiny.
Yeah. Well, speaking of relaunches and retooling and so forth, shall we start talking about our DC book, which is the 12th issue of the latest launch of Green Lantern Corps. Now, my reading of this issue is colored by a couple of things. One, it's the 12th issue of you know, the new 52 titles. And I guess for me, I'm getting to the point where, I mean, I'm still liking a lot of what's going on. I'm not hating any of it by any means. But this issue had the baggage that I came with it of, I mean, I loved the Sinestro Corps War, Blackest Night, a lot of those things we've had over the last couple of years. I think over really the last 4 or 5 years, what Geoff Johns and Peter Tomasi and some others have done with the Green Lantern franchise has just been amazing. But I'm a little tired of this lantern-on-lantern violence that we keep getting, and a lot of this issue was Green Lanterns fighting the Alpha Lanterns and all this stuff, and hey, this is an acceptable end to the Alpha War story arc, and I end in quotes. This was just another chapter in the overarching storyline of the Guardians apparently kind of going nuts and planning to wipe out, like, all of the Corps or something. And that overarching thing is even starting to drag on a bit too long. None of this is bad. I'm liking it, but I'm ready for things to move on. And that really kind of summed up a lot of this issue for me. I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, the art was slightly above average. I think it was, you know, really good. I mean, the story was perfectly fine. I just wasn't overly excited by this issue or the build-up to the whole Third Army thing. And here we are, a year into the new 52. I still don't feel like we've gotten the story time with these characters, the tightness of the storytelling in general. So I like this, but I would have rather have just loved this and been, wow, this is just another great Green Lantern Corps story or whatever. They just, while they're telling good stuff, I really think over at DC, they need to tighten up their storytelling, get in, tell some great stuff, move on, tell some more great stuff. And I guess that aspect is probably best summed up for me by the two-page ad for the Rotworld storyline that's going to cross over 16 issues of Animal Man, Swamp Thing, and Frankenstein. And that's a storyline that's been building up since the first issue of Animal Man and Swamp Thing. So, I mean, to me, it's indicative of a general problem at DC of telling these grand, sweeping, epic sagas, which, you know, can be fine and good. I'm not, you know, totally against that. But I'd like a little tighter storytelling. I'd like to have felt that a year in, we've actually spent more time with these characters in the stories and stuff versus, I mean, it's 12 issues. We've read 12 issues of stuff. So I'm, you know, again, this was a good issue. But for me, some of the baggage of just how representative of it is of other DC stuff too, kind of carried in and muted my enthusiasm for the issue. So tell me you loved it.
I thought it was okay. It was the end of the Alpha War saga, as you said. I'm just getting so tired of the Rogue Guardians concept. I mean, the Guardians have been kind of jerks for a long time.
Oh yeah.
They've been like really overt, you know, bosses from hell ever since Geoff Johns took over
the Green Lantern books,
maybe further back, but I mean, I would say
since I started reading the book in the early 80s.
Well, they were jerky, but I think he's given them more sinister undertones.
They were jerks, now they're sinister. That I completely agree. That's a different change.
And I don't know if he's got like just some deep-seated authority issues going on, you know, where that's why he's a creator and not working at a job, you know. You know, now he is the boss. So, you know, what's that tell us? You know, he's the boss, the chief creative officer at DC. And I keep seeing news stories in the comics press about how, you know, DC editors are really heavy handed and, you know, screwing around with storylines. You got creators quitting because they don't want to put up with it and stuff. And I can't help but draw parallels there. You know, but it just, I wish they would just move on from this. When they're fighting an external threat, I like it a lot more than when they're monkeying around with internal threats.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, that's just me personally and how I'm appreciating the story. Some other people might think that's a really cool turn of events. And, you know, I thought it was a really interesting storyline at first, which, to your point again about how long it's been dragging on, I thought it was an interesting storyline, you know, 2 years ago, and it's just been dragging on and on for so long that I wish they would just get to the point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's a certain amount of slow burn, and they're really wanting to set up the story. They are giving the Guardians a lot more unique looks to a lot of them, you know, so you can kind of tell some of them apart, although there's a certain sameness to the different bald ones. Also, as a kind of a meta issue to this, the next issue blurb in this and pretty much all of the other issues of number 12 that I've read in the last few weeks, you know, come back here next month for issue zero, you know, the origin of Guy Gardner. It's just like this 0 month that's going to have is just going to be an interruption to the entire line of comics.
And that's very much worth talking about because, I mean, I'm still reading all of the new 52 books, and I've been very disappointed with how many of the next week or next issue blurbs have been, hey, join us in 2 months as we continue this storyline, but meanwhile, next month, as we interrupt for this little origin story or what have you. I think you're dead on the money there that what I had expected to be a pre-planned natural pausing point between story arcs where they could just do a 0 month and then move on, they've got, for various reasons, way too many titles having to essentially, you know, pause their main story for the month. And I'm, again, very disappointed with that.
It's not that bad when it's a title you're reading. When it's everything, it's going to be really noticeable. You know, it's just, and maybe they're looking as, oh, we're going to bring on a bunch of new readers. And you always got to balance bringing on new readers with how much are you going to alienate existing readers?
Well, and if this is going to be a speed bump in the story momentum for the ongoing stories, not only is that going to disrupt existing readers, any new readers you get who pick up that next issue, isn't that going to be potentially an awkward spot for them to jump on?
You're That's true, because it's in the middle of a storyline.
You know, this is something that marketing may have said, hey, let's, and I don't know what, caused the zero issues to come about. I don't know their origin and stuff.
I can't believe that it was the creators on all the titles. Maybe it was the aforementioned Guardians of the Universe type management at DC in conjunction with marketing, but...
Yeah, it seems like it's something that clearly came down from on high, whether it was editorial or marketing. In either case, it didn't come about soon enough, you know, like i.e. 6-8 months ago, that the creators could have planned accordingly and been at a natural pausing point. Because I think it's possible to do issues that are more flashback, how did we get to where we are today kinds of stories and stuff, and make them feel like just totally organic, natural parts of an ongoing series that work as just great breather issues and stuff. And that's not the sense I'm getting about the zero issues.
Well, look at your ad for the Rot World storyline in Animal Man Swamp Thing, and it looks like it's crossing over into Frankenstein Agent of Shade also.
Yeah, it is.
The last issues that we read of that, were the 12 issues.
The prologues are in August. The story starts in October.
Right, exactly. So we read the prologues, and both of those, when I read them, were the same thing. It's like, and they built some good interest in me for the story. And I read them, and I'm like, all right, let's get going. And then it's like, next month, we're going to give you John Constantine's origin, and then we'll start the story in 2 months. And it's like, yeah, okay.
It just seems like poor planning, and I really believe story momentum is one of the best ways to combat sales attrition. And if you can get people excited about the story and they can't wait for that next issue, when it comes out, they'll buy it. You know, but when the readers get either jaded, bored, or impatient, I mean, like right now, I think the big draw for the next issue of Green Lantern Corps is that it'll finally be a different story. You know, although it's going to be probably the Third Army, which is kind of a continuation of this or whatever. But when you put speed bumps in the road like these zero issues, again, I see how it could drive new readers. But like you said, it's a balancing act. You get enough new readers to compensate for the existing ones you may lose just because stories are dragging on. They're interrupting the story for a month. I mean, a lot of the existing readers, of course, are going to get the zero issues and then hopefully can jump back onto the story when it starts back up. But it just seems like they could have had a more organized and smarter game plan for this stuff just to begin with.
Sure. I mean, I don't think any existing readers, I'm sure maybe there's somebody, but I mean, I would imagine the majority of the existing readers are going to just read the zero issues, you know, suck it up, get an interruption, and then keep on going. There's probably not that many people going to jump off because of it. So, you know, the effect they have on existing readers would probably be relatively minor if the people are liking the books anyway. The problem, as we've talked about this before, is you give people that kind of little nudge or decision point. If someone's kind of not that thrilled about a book, maybe that zero issue pause is going to be enough to tip them over the wrong side of that wall.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the sales on that do. And of course, we'll have, you know, 4 weeks where just about the only thing we'll be able to pick is zero issues. So we'll see what we think of those too.
So 3 out of 5 for me. I just thought it was an average issue, and that somewhat colors just how tired I am of, you know, how some of this stuff has been going.
Yeah. I mean, I give it a strong 3, but it's pretty much just average. And for a franchise that at one point had been, you know, garnering a lot of critical acclaim, a lot of positive buzz, and a lot of excitement, that says something.
Yeah, like Green Lantern 12 that just came out, that one I like a lot more, actually, than this one. You know, bringing back some more of the Black Lantern Corps stuff, and it just seemed like, I don't know, the story, again, it had more of an external threat as opposed to this inward focus.
Yeah, yeah. But even a lot of the external threat in the Green Lantern stuff is them against either a Black Lantern or the Yellow Lanterns.
Oh, that's true.
It's still lantern-on-lantern violence.
Yeah.
And they've been beating that drum for quite some time.
Need to get the tattooed man back.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Daredevil. 17. The Pause That Refreshes.
Yeah, this pretty much.
This is kind of a... I'll call it a done-in-one kind of story that sits between 16 and what will come up in 18, I guess, unless there's a 17.1 that I'm not noticing.
I don't think there is, and I would be very disappointed if there was, because frankly, this is the sort of thing I would have expected in a 0.1 issue. I mean, I'm glad it was a regular issue. I think that was a smart move. I still think the 0.1s are a fundamentally flawed idea, but this is the kind of issue that keeps a title accessible. We've finished a major story arc. We're basically pausing and doing a major reflection on the relationship between Matt Murdock and Foggy. They've been law partners for years, friends for years, and at the end of last issue, you know, Foggy basically said, you know, I'm dissolving the firm, you're fired. And, you know, this, to me, is just really reflective on how, I mean, Mark Waid's a brilliant writer. This was a great character issue. It gave time to really dive into, for newer readers, why was that scene at the end of last issue such a big deal? And I loved this issue. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. Well, he built some irony into the issue, too, right? With the, you know, from the past where Matt was chewing out Foggy for not focusing on the law business.
Yeah.
You know, which is why Foggy had the blow up last issue. But then you see that the reason Foggy didn't have it, a lot of it was, you know, to Matt's benefit, and he had Matt's best interest at heart in that. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, little different motivations for Matt, although, you know, being a superhero and going around, you know, saving people. Yeah, that's kind of a justification. So I like this issue. I liked Allred's art. I think Allred, while he has a very different style, it is of the school that we've been seeing in this title. I think when they put in the different artists, you know, Marcos Martin, Pablo Marcos, Chris Samnee, you know, these different kinds of artists, they all have a similar school of art. And, you know, it's not like it's something that's a complete departure. So they mesh well together, even though because of the 18 issues a year schedule that Marvel has a lot of their books on, it's pretty much impossible to have a regular art team on any book.
Now, what's interesting is this is, of course, not what they had solicited this issue to be. This was supposed to be the return of Paulo Rivera and the start of the story arc with the new killer of Coyote. So, I mean, I think this goes directly towards the, you know, we need to do something so we can use a fill-in artist because of the pace they're going at. And for what was, you know, essentially a fill-in issue, they got a really good art team. They told a really good story. I'm okay with this.
Well, and to Mark Waid's credit, he did a fill-in issue that didn't feel like a totally throwaway fill-in issue. You know, it's like when I read, and I always go back to these issues because they bugged me so much, but those FF fill-in issues that Hickman did with the Inhumans, it just, I felt like the brakes had been thrown on the whole storyline. I got something completely unrelated for two issues.
Well, I agree with that entirely, but I think Hickman kind of learned that lesson. And when we got the fill-in issue of FF or whatever, where the kids were basically riding the elephants on the safari thing or whatever, that was another fill-in issue, but it was one that really could have almost only taken place then. Just like this is an issue that's a fill-in that pretty much is perfectly timed off the events of last issue. So, I mean, if you've got a really talented writer, and I think, you know, Jonathan Hickman, Mark Waid, both incredibly talented writers, they can almost on a moment's notice, it seems like, say, oh, I got to fill in after this issue. What do I have in that previous issue that would seem like a natural kind of a done-in-one story that I can tell? You know, and that, I think, is just so much better than, like you said, those human issues of the FF, where it's almost a non sequitur.
Well, I think also then, you know, same thing, those issues with the kids in Africa, the art team was not a violent change up, which was not the case with the Inhumans issues.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of things that play in there. I don't think the writer has a lot to do with what fill-in artists they're being assigned at Marvel. I think it's just like, here you go. I don't know. I'm guessing that that's an editorial decision.
Well, and frankly, the editors may not have a whole lot of choice because they need something potentially on short notice. So it's a who's available that I can get right now.
Although short notice has, well, I don't know if I buy that because, I mean, planning-wise, they should know. Because they know what their publishing schedule is, and they know what, you know, the original, the guys can do, so.
This was slated to be Paulo Rivera's return, so it's not like he'd been stacked up on previous issues, so presumably something happened unexpected, they needed to delay that a month.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, it's something where if you get an art team that's stylistically appropriate, you've got a writer who can tell a story that naturally flows, versus a case where it seems like they're interjecting a miniseries or a one-shot into a story flow. I mean, that's a night and day difference right there.
So anyway, I mean, excellent issue. I really enjoyed it. I think that, it's just fans of Daredevil, you know, should like this issue, especially longtime fans of Daredevil. This is, this new take on Daredevil. I've been hearing a lot of positive feedback. It is not the same, deeply troubled and dark Daredevil that, you know, had been told for many years. So people who came into that and that was the Daredevil they loved, I think it's a little harder pill to swallow. Whereas, you know, Daredevil for a long time was more of the swashbuckly kind of character. And that's what he's back to now to some extent. I like that.
Well, and again, this issue is harkening back to the time frame of Daredevil number one. And I mean, kind of the original one around that era. So, of course, both it's, you know, again, that type of Daredevil, but I like how Wade is really able to leverage the full history of the character without getting mired in continuity, that kind of stuff, and really pull into the present day stuff from the dawn of the character. I like when they acknowledge the past and use it to their advantage, which I think they did a beautiful job here on. So... to me, this was a very strong issue, a very strong 4 out of 5, and I'd, you know, like to see more breather issues like this that serve as an accessible story point, yet a natural and relevant pause between story arcs.
Yeah, same here, 4 out of 5. Well done issue.
Yeah.
Wade's been doing a really good job. I'm thoroughly enjoying his Daredevil.
Yeah, he's been knocking it out of the park on that title.
Yeah, I mean, it's Wade himself is one of the writers who kind of gets a pass from me. If he's doing something, I will try it. You know, and I saw the Marvel Now solicits for the relaunches, and I haven't been reading Hulk for a long time, and I saw Wade's doing one of the Hulk relaunches, and I was like, well, that'll get me to buy Hulk. You know, it just put someone like that that's got a good track record with me on a book. I'm going to try it.
I would be hard-pressed to name anything he's written in recent years that I just really did not like. The only thing I can think of that he did that at first didn't really click with me was his take on Captain America. And it wasn't until I'd heard something by Kurt Busiek, who was basically explaining that, you know, the vision of Cap there is the man with the plan. You know, and I'm like, no, that's more Batman and stuff. But then Busiek had pointed out that, I mean, Cap's been leading the Avengers forever. And part of why he is he's almost, you know, kind of a tactical genius or whatever. And it's like, oh. So, you know, once that clicked, I understood, you know, what Wade was doing, where he was going and stuff, and that worked a lot better for me. But even then, it wasn't like I hated it or anything. I mean, seriously, I can't think of almost anything he's done that I've read that I think has been just, geez, this sucks or anything. Or, wow, he should have done better or something like that. He's had a great track record since way back on his seminal run on The Flash and a few other books. So... definitely a writer I tend to check out when he's doing stuff.
Okay, next up we've got Elephant Men number 42.
Elephant Men is one of the few real kind of sci-fi ongoing comics I can think of. There's probably a few others out there, but this is one of the, I think, the main ones. This issue got off to a little bit of a slow start for me because of just how much of the beginning of it was just filled with narration and exposition in the form of captions and stuff like that. And I felt I was being kind of told, not shown some of the story. Then we get this whole almost dream sequence with Ebony and stuff. It didn't start out as strong as I would have liked. And this was, in many respects, despite having, you know, Sleeping Partners Part 1 on the cover and stuff, this was kind of a middle issue in many respects. Because, I mean, this is an ongoing series. You got to expect there's going to be carryover from the previous issues. I think that's fair game. And there's very much here. This was dealing with the aftermath of a lot of the recent issues. Ebony having been injured, there's a killer on the loose, they're looking for the bodies in the sewers, that kind of stuff. And I would hate for somebody to go see this on Araxi. Oh, it's a part one of something, it should be fully accessible, I should be starting on Ground Zero, whatever, and maybe come in and get a little confused or something. I think it's clear what's going on, but again, seeing the part one thing gave me certain expectations of a bit more of a clean slate than we got. This is still a really good series. They get really good artists. They're telling a really fun, interesting sci-fi series. It's kind of a cop show mixed with genetic engineering in the aftermath of a major war in the near future. So it's in and of itself got a very unique world and setting and pitch. So it's not like it's just another superhero title or just another space opera or whatever. You know, I enjoyed this. I thought it was good. I don't think it's a high watermark for the series, though.
Well, I would not recommend people jump into this if you've not been reading it as an issue anyway. I mean, you see part one of four, you know, very fair. I think that the best way to get into Elephant Men is to pick up the trades. And Richard Starkings keeps the trades in print. He keeps them very accessible. You know, that's the best way to check out this series. Go pick up volume one of the trade. There's some really nice hardbacks and paperback versions of them available. Volume five just came out, you know, and there's a volume zero that tells stories that are set back in the war that happened some 20 odd years before the main storyline here, which is set in 2259. That volume zero is more of those war story kind of issues collected together. So you can, you know, if you're going to start on it, what I would recommend is you start on one, not on zero, because one's really in the time frame and it's going to be telling you the main storyline. Then at some point you can jump back and read the number zero for the background stuff. That's the best way, in my opinion, to get into this, because this issue, number 42, the last trade, I believe, went up through issue 39, maybe. And 40 and 41 was more of a little, if you're going to have a jumping on point, you know, that would be more of a way to do it. You know, so you can catch up on the trades and then switch to issues, or you can just read the trades if you want to do it that way. I know some people prefer one way or another. Some people will like to catch up in the trade. The thing that I like about the issues, you know, if you ultimately switch over to the issues, is there are extra things in those issues. So in this issue, we get a nice article that Richard does. He's talking about the best of British comics art. And there's actually some really nice painted images here from this guy who did covers on a bunch of, he chose a bunch of covers from something called Look In Magazine. This guy has some really nice painted art of, like, you know, the pop culture. You know, you see Planet of the Apes and Bruce Lee and Star Wars and things, you know, Space 1999 and stuff. Then there's a very short Charlie Loves Robots backup that's been running in this for, what, about a year maybe?
Sounds about right, for quite a while.
Which you get like two or three pages a month, but it's just a really charming story. It's also set in the future, not in the, I don't think it's in the same Elephant Men universe, although it could be for all we know. But, you know, that's, you know, it's about a kid who loves robots, right? As one might expect from the title, and he gets sent off on a summer to his grandfather's farm. And then they actually had a preview in this issue of Wills Portacio's Non-Humans number one, which I had kind of skipped over in previews. And I actually, they gave us a 5-page preview here, and I thought it looked pretty good. So I'm going to rethink, and I'm going to order that first issue of Non-Humans based on the preview that we got here. But, you know, back to Elephant Men itself, I agree with you. The first few pages in here, a lot of background information, a lot of, I'm guessing, pseudo, scientific, stuff about, the origins of the transgenics with the, human animal hybrids. Then we have the Ebony Dream, because Ebony Hyde, who's the elephant men is a generic term for human animal hybrids. And there are ones that are animal human. I mean, they're all animal. There are some that are elephant human, like Ebony Hyde. We have the main character of Elephant Men is actually Hip Flask, who is a hippo human hybrid. And there are, camel, zebra, crocodile, rhino, giraffe, all different kinds of animal human hybrids. And these were created by this corporation called Mappo. And they were very strong, very tough, and they were actually used as the foot soldiers in this war that happened in the past from the main time frame of this that's focused on in the volume zero of the trade paperback. Kind of a very cool world. The main storyline's kind of a set in Los Angeles, kind of a Blade Runner-y kind of take on Los Angeles. But very interesting, and Ebony got injured in a storyline recently, and he's in the hospital. So this, we get the Ebony Dream sequence. Now, that's drawn by Dave Sim of Cerebus fame, and this actually appears in color here. It was in black and white as an excerpt in the Hero Comics 2012 issue that came out about a month and a half ago. So that Ebony Dreams thing is something that we've seen before anyone who read Hero Comics 2012, but it fits into the story here. It also stands on its own okay, and that's why it was excerpted as a short story elsewhere. But, once we get past that into the main part of the story here, this is what we really expect. And Axel Medellin, who's doing the art, he's a really good artist. I really enjoy his work on Elephant Men. And we've had some really great artists on this series.
Oh, yeah.
Moritat, who's doing All-Star Western now, did a stint on Elephant Men. Ladron did some early issues. Gabe Batiste has done some work. We had Tony Parker did an issue. We get lots of different artists here, but for the last while, Axel Medellin has been doing a lot of the issues, and he's got a very nice painted art style, kind of gives a great look and feel to the book, and I really enjoy his work on here.
Yeah, it's good stuff. One thing that I found kind of interesting is I was looking at the solicitation here, and what jumped out at me was this was supposed to come out on April 25th. So, I mean, on the one hand, it's like 4 months late. On the other hand, I mean, we've been getting issues regularly. And, what seems to be the case here is the delay between issues, it's not coming out monthly. Maybe it's every 5 or 6 weeks or something like that. So it's not like you're waiting forever for that next issue. But over time, it does seem to kind of build up on them. This is something that, again, was solicited back in February or whatever, and I'm sure they've got a few other issues in the pipeline that are solicited, but it kind of, I think, will self-correct over time. But I think part of why these issues may take a little longer to get out than average is I think they're a little longer than average. I think the art's a little more detailed and just, frankly, higher quality than average. And that goes towards, getting really good artists and stuff like that on this. I'd rather they take their time and take an extra week or two per issue to get it out if they need to than, well, let's cut corners or something. It's a series that I think is worth checking out. It was one that I had not checked out for the longest time, but I went, got all the back issues, and I started at that first issue. And that, I think, is the best way to catch up on this. While there may be decent jumping on points throughout, I think you'll really appreciate the story better just by getting to know the characters from issue one on.
Yeah. And again, the trades, Richard keeps in print. You can find them on Amazon. I'm guessing you could find them on places like InStock Trades, your local comic shop. may have them if your local comic shop tends to be indie friendly and stock image stuff. That would be something that you could ask them about. They could certainly order them, but they are available. You know, the thing I like about Richard is he does keep the stuff in print, as opposed to, you know, sometimes these things fall out of print and then it's really hard to catch, you know, from other publishers. It would be hard then to pick up on this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, this was a 3 out of 5. I thought it was good, but again, got off to a little bit of a slow start. I think the series itself is, like I said, definitely worth checking out.
I'm going to give it a 4, based on the whole package. I mean, the Dave Sim sequence, I loved. The Axel Medellin, really strong finish to the issue. I love the extras in here, with the backups and the preview and everything else. You know, what I get in this book for $3.99 compared to some other books for $3.99, this is well worth it. You know, there's a lot of content in here.
Yeah, I think it's definitely justifying the $3.99 price point. I would agree with that.
Okay. Any other things that really rocked your world this week?
Not that I can think of. I mean, there was a ton of stuff. It was all good. Let me go flip through and see if there was anything. I mean, we had the second issue of Bloodshot, which I liked.
Yeah, that was good. We had the Before Watchmen Rorschach, number one.
Yeah.
I thought it was well in character. I mean, you know, if you liked the Rorschach character, I thought it made sense for me personally, although, you know, there are some people who, that one seems to have a little bit more of a mixed feelings from people as I'm reading on how people like the Before Watchmen stuff.
Interesting.
I think I've seen a lot more, you know, people kind of universally like, Minutemen, Silk Spectre, and Ozymandias. And the Night Owl and Rorschach, I have heard much more mixed feelings on.
That's interesting, because Ozymandias was the one I was kind of clicked with me the least. I think a lot of that was just the art style, though.
Yeah.
Again,
Spider-Man was really good. What did you think of Spider-Man?
Yeah, I'm liking what they're doing on Spider-Man these days.
I thought it was just such a cool revelation on the Lizard as a character. It just made sense, right? But it was, oh, okay. I never thought of that in 50 years of Spider-Man. Or, you know, I mean, Lizard came in at like issue like 6 or something of Spider-Man. So he's been around forever.
And they did it in a way that it's not like, and you fools never noticed this as readers. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas there have been times a writer will try to do a new twist on an established character with the, how could you not have seen this, you morons, kind of thing. Which always rubs me wrong. And again, that wasn't the case there. I mean, they're doing great stuff over on Spider-Man these days. Very pleased with that.
Next issue will be the 50th anniversary issue.
Yes.
So, like an extra size $5.99 dealie that we will be reviewing next week on the show.
See, Red Ultron, or not Ultron, Voltron 7, continuing to enjoy that series. It's actually like a lot better than most people would expect. And then over at DC, there is an interesting issue of DC Universe Presents. I say interesting because it seems like it really should have just been an issue of Teen Titans. It's kind of going on with what happened with Kid Flash on the Dinosaur Island thing he was on for part of an issue after the Culling storyline. And it leads straight into what's going to happen in a upcoming issue of Teen Titans, I guess after the Zero issue. Just seemed like, you know, an odd place to put it. Whereas they could have, you know, introduced some other property or whatever in that issue of DC Universe Presents.
Well, good heads up to people who are collecting and liking Teen Titans who are not getting DC Universe Presents. They might want to check out that issue, which I assume is number 12.
It's number 12, and he was blatantly advertised on the cover and stuff and in the solicitation. So I would hope they would have already noticed it, but yes. And I'm pretty sure there was a mention in the Teen Titans stuff that he was going to be in there. But people who decided not to read that may get a little confused by... Actually, it might have even been the backup feature in the current issue of Teen Titans. I think it was, actually. Current issue or next issue, I forget.
Pathfinder number 1. For anyone who plays fantasy role-playing games, like Dungeons & Dragons, kind of the grandfather of progenitor of fantasy role-playing, Dungeons & Dragons... Dungeons and Dragons has kind of gone off the rails under its current stewardship by Wizards of the Coast, in my opinion. 4.0 is a terrible role-playing system. I played it for over a year, and it's awful. And we switched to playing Pathfinder, which is an open-source alternative. It's the same kind of, it's in the vein of Dungeons and Dragons. Pathfinder, a much superior role-playing system. Now, we've got Pathfinder the comic from Dynamite, and it's written by Jim Zubkovich. I did an interview with him about this issue. And Jim Zub, he did a great job on the Pathfinder comic, in my opinion. If you like those kind of fantasy comics, give that one a try. It had a cleric acting more like a cleric should probably act than I've probably ever seen in a D&D fantasy type of comic, and probably more like a cleric than I've ever seen someone actually role play a cleric. Yeah, and the fighter is acting like a fighter, and it's just the characters are acting like the characters should act. It was very well done. I also read Homecoming number one from Aspen, which started out, I was a little leery about it. It was kind of like your, you know, kind of alien abduction, alien comes to Earth kind of story. There were some really overused tropes in the first half of the issue, but it finished up really strong. There were some switch ups. This is David Wall, who has written some of the Executive Assistant universe. I think he helped create the Executive Assistant universe, but finished up the issue very strong and has me on board for checking out what's coming next.
That's,
and the Homecoming,
interesting, because I frankly was not overly impressed by the ending. I didn't think it was a super strong ending.
I liked it.
Gathered that. It just
mixed
seemed
feelings
a little,
there.
Yes, that's all I'm saying.
You may like it, and you may not, as with any comic.
Yes. So you were saying?
So I was saying I liked it.
Sorry, I thought you were going to go on to something else.
Well, I like the fact also that Homecoming is kind of, you know, you have a dual play there. It's not just the high school event, which, you know, I don't want to ruin it for someone who does want to check it out. But I enjoyed the issue, and I like the art, too. What else? Pigs continues to be good. If you like Russian sleeper agents via Cuba working to overthrow the U.S. government. That one's a really interesting series. Walking Dead 101 continues to excite and amaze, I guess. This is a series that lately I've been hearing a lot of people online kind of griping about Walking Dead. And they're kind of, oh, I'm so done with it. I just, you know, I still like it. Every issue I read and enjoy thoroughly. It's, you know, top of the stack material for me, continues to be so.
I have to wonder how much of that kind of, it sounds like almost like a backlash or whatever, is due to, frankly, at this point, it's a mainstream book.
Yeah, some people, like, once something becomes too well accepted, they just can't enjoy it anymore.
I mean,
it's not their niche thing that only they enjoy, so we got to pull back from it.
From my perspective, the series was really great at the beginning, hit a kind of a creative high point around the Governor storyline, and has been good since then, but not as good. And I think if Kirkman kick it back into the kind of the high gear it was in around the time of, you know, just before and around the Governor storyline and stuff, he could just, you know, knock the sales through the roof, legitimately, not just with a bazillion covers. But I'll also admit, you know, the genre and stuff like that is something I typically avoid. So the fact that I'm still reading this series 101 issues in, that says a lot for the title. Typically, you know, with a zombie book, I would not have read anywhere close to that many issues. I don't have that many other zombie issues in my entire collection of closing in on 50,000 comics. So
just in general, horror books you don't tend to read either.
Exactly.
The fact that this is more of a story,
yeah,
you know, human interest or human struggle set against that backdrop is...
It's set in a horror zombie realm, but it's a tale of survival. It's not a horror book.
It's not your standard really stupid people stumbling through a horror movie doing foolish things. You know, the actions of the people are relatively well thought out.
Yeah.
So, good week of comics, I thought.
So, that do it?
Does it for me.
Join us next week when we discuss Before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan number 1 from DC, The Amazing Spider-Man number 692 from Marvel, and Rocketeer, Cargo of Doom number 1 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.